Welcome to the Disrupting Obesity Podcast. I'm Charlotte Skanes, and I'll be sharing ways to regain control over your body and lose an extreme amount of weight naturally. Being fat is about so much more than just the food. It's about your relationship with food. That means that dealing with your weight is about more than just the food too. You have to change that relationship. You have to start disrupting obesity. I've talked about when I get sick, and I've talked about the fact that my dad died, but I don't think that I've ever really connected those dots on here. And I've talked about emotional eating and closet eating, but I don't think I've talked specifically about grief eating before. And since I've had a couple of really different experiences with it, and because I think it's an issue for a lot of us, I think I should talk about it. But I am struggling a bit with this one. Grief is such a personal thing and such a universal thing, but it doesn't seem to make it any easier to talk about. I just don't think there are any emotions that we can't eat, right? We eat to feel more of a feeling. We eat to feel less of a feeling. We eat to create feelings and to get them to stop. I think we do all of those things when it comes to grief eating, even the, you know, to get more of a feeling one. I definitely had times where I wanted to sit in my grief, to trigger it intentionally. And I used foods as a vehicle for that. I for sure will eat specific foods because I want to feel sad, because those foods trigger grief for me. They remind me of that other person. And sometimes we want to grieve, right? I think it's portrayed a lot as something that just sweeps us up and carries us away. And grief is that. But it's also a choice sometimes. It's hard. We associate foods with people and we associate foods with grief, right? We were given 24 pounds of lasagna in the first 3 days after my dad died. I'm pretty sure that's a food I'm always going to associate with grieving. And I didn't before. It was just lasagna. My dad died in late April, 6 weeks before I got sick, with a variation of the same thing that killed him. But it really was just a weird medical coincidence. I didn't catch it from him. Pancreatitis isn't contagious. It doesn't make any sense at all that we both got it. And I didn't have it. I wasn't sick when he died. We had no clue what was coming. I was 26 weeks pregnant with our third son when my dad died. And people have ideas and opinions about what pregnant women should do when it comes to grief and grieving. The people in my life were all pretty adamant that giving in to it would have been a bad idea, right? I couldn't shut it down completely, but I didn't want to get hysterical. Plus, our oldest third birthday party was right around the corner. It was 5 weeks away, and we had a 14-month-old too. And they didn't understand what was going on. There was no break. I couldn't give in to my grief. I had to get up and be a mom and run the house and get ready for our third little guy to join us in August. I guess I kind of assumed that grief would be right there waiting to jump up and bite me on the ass once he was born, right? Like I'd have to deal with it then. And I was in shock, I think, for a good chunk of that initial time after my dad died anyway. I don't have a lot of distinct memories from that period, just shock. And then I was sick. I was sick before I knew I was sick because I just thought I was having another really rough pregnancy. Getting sick postponed the grief too. It postponed everything. My participation in every facet of my life except for survival pretty much stopped. So confronting the fact that my dad was gone when I was barely here myself probably wouldn't have been a great idea. Once it was clear that I was here to stay, I still didn't have the emotional space for grief. I was too busy trying to heal from the physical stuff and the psychological damage from being separated from the boys for 5 months. And it might have only been 5 months in the hospital, but my physical recovery took years. And there are things medically I'm just going to have to deal with for the rest of my life. Things that are different now, right? And the risk that something else could happen is always hanging over us. My emotional recovery from those 5 months has taken years too. And there are things psychologically that I'm just going to have to deal with for the rest of my life. So I didn't have emotional space for my grief for a very long time, but food was there for me. I lost weight while I was in the hospital, but I gained most of it back in my first few months at home. Grief was just everywhere. I was grieving what I'd lost, the time with my boys, the first 5 months of my youngest son's life. I was grieving the body that I'd had before I'd gotten sick, the one with all the parts of all of its organs, the one that could, you know, do things like digest food normally and move without assistance. I would drag myself up the stairs, just using my arms on the railing as much as my legs, you know, just hauling myself up one step at a time and then waiting on each stair to catch my breath until I, you know, felt like I could trust myself to move again. And going down was harder, so much worse, but so much harder to describe because there was this moment of terror with each stair that my arms weren't going to hold me, right? As I tried to step down, it was so much scarier than going up. It always felt like I was just a second from falling. And I would stand there waiting to work up my nerve. And I would remember the me who would run up those stairs with a little boy on one hip and a laundry basket on the other. So it was grief. It was finding a new way to keep going. Oh yeah. And my dad had just died, right? But I couldn't process it because at first I was pregnant and then I was too busy trying to stay alive. And then I was too busy trying to do things like navigate the stairs again. Food. Lots of eating. The night he died, we got a call. The call. Super early. I think it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. My mother-in-law came over to watch the boys. And after we'd been to the hospital to see my mom and my brother, we had some time before we could go to the funeral home. And I asked Sean to drive me to the nearest Burger King so that I could have my favorite breakfast. It was 45 minutes away. So food, lots of eating. That wasn't the case with my first big loss though. Lisa died when I was 30 and I'd had my weight off for 4 years. And when she died, just under a month after her 35th birthday, I lost all interest in food. Food I was eating was pure comfort food and none of it was something that anybody could describe as good for me, but I wasn't eating very much of it anyway. She had always been my favorite person to eat with, whether it was with our parents at a buffet when we were little kids or at one of our weekly restaurant trips together as we got older. We loved to eat together. We were fat together. We went shopping together in the States for the clothes we couldn't find in Canada back then. And we had some of our best meals on those trips. The whole obesity landscape was very different back then. This was the early aughts, right? So percentages were a lot lower. There was no category for our level of obesity back then. We both had BMIs of 60 or higher, right? Which is now classified as hyper obesity. That's the new kid on the block. Back then, super obesity, and we still called it super morbid obesity, it was the new classification then, and it was 40 or higher. So when she and I looked around in Canada, where you couldn't even get plus size clothes over a certain size, and internet shopping in 2001 wasn't quite what it is right now. When we looked around, we didn't see a lot of people who looked like us. It's pretty alienating, but we had each other. It was just another layer of this amazing bond that we'd shared as cousins since we were very small. And then she died. And we both lost our weight for a while at that point, but we still loved eating together. It was our thing, right? We just did it in a very different way. And once she was gone, it wasn't a conscious thing. I wasn't thinking about it in these terms, but I just didn't feel like eating anymore. Whereas when my dad died, I did. I would think about him or want to think about him and just reach for food. With Lisa, the hole felt so big. It was like I just knew nothing I ate could fill it. Grief, strange. It seems like on the surface that grief eating would be purely a comfort thing, right? You know how I break down emotional eating in three ways: comfort, reward, cope. Comes down to those three things. Grief isn't a reward thing, and it does seem like a comfort thing, and it is. But grieving isn't just one emotion. It can bring up a whole lot of other shit, right? Anger, resentment, whatever emotion that you've got attached to the trauma or baggage that that person's death brings up for you. Relief, despair, depression, glee. It's a big fucking list. And we don't comfort all of those feelings. A lot of those are cope feelings, right? Which is a different kettle of kittens entirely. There's nothing wrong with comfort, reward, or cope eating. I feel like we talk about emotional eating in such a negative way, and I can't see how that's helpful. It's a human thing. Everybody does it. It just gets skewed for some of us. Beating yourself up for emotional eating is like beating yourself up for picking something up with your dominant hand. It's what we do. But when it's a problem for you, when you're comforting, rewarding, and coping too much with food, you need to figure it out. You got to 3A weigh it. Take a good look at what you're doing. Actually look at it. Stop the mindless munching and just the mindless eating in general. You need to be super aware of both what you're actually eating and which emotions you're trying to feed by eating it. Let's break that down. By being aware of what you're eating, I don't just mean that you know you're tucking into a plate of poutine. I mean, how many calories is it? Yeah, even if you've already gone over for the day. You got to build awareness around this stuff. Then I mean, what does it taste like? Why are you enjoying it? By being aware of which emotions you're trying to feed, I mean, if you're eating the lasagna to remember your dad and trigger those super raw feelings in the first few days after he died, don't just eat the lasagna. If you're doing it to feel those feelings, feel them. Be really present with what you're trying to do. Think the thoughts, remember the feelings, whatever it is that you're trying to process, and you're going to find that you need less of the lasagna to get to the same emotional payout. I've gotten ahead of myself, I think, and mixed in a good bit of acknowledgement and accountability there too. But this is how you move through it and start to get a handle on your emotional eating. Don't just eat. Make yourself aware of the calories in your food, ideally before you start eating it. And make yourself aware of the emotion you're feeling, whether it's to get one feeling to stop or to make yourself feel something else. Acknowledge both. Track what you're eating, ideally before you start eating it, and acknowledge what you're feeling. Don't just stuff it down. Your accountability looks like leaving a few tablespoons of the lasagna on your plate this time and actively being present with the lasagna as you're eating it. That's how you realize that maybe you don't need those last few tablespoons this time. And maybe next time you'll take a little bit less to begin with. It's small, sustainable changes that are going to pave the way. We need to swing back around to a little comment I made a couple of minutes ago when I was talking about that plate of poutine. I need to expand on it because when it comes to emotional eating, it can start sliding into binge territory in a pretty big hurry. So when you find yourself sitting there with that beautiful plate of fries and cheese smothered in gravy, you need to know how many calories it is, even if you're already over in your calories, especially when you're already over with your calories. And you need to know for a few reasons. Maybe it's not as bad as you're thinking, right? Maybe you're about to spend all day tomorrow beating yourself up over what a horrible day you had today because you went so far over in your calories, and it's not that bad. You've kicked off a guilt and shame spiral completely unnecessarily, and now you're going over tomorrow too. And you're probably not going to track that either. So your relationship with food is going unchallenged, and it's not changing, which is a problem. The whole thing. The whole pattern, like there's a lot going on there. You're not tracking for a few reasons, but one of them is that when you pulled out that poutine, you already knew that you didn't have any or enough calories left. So what's the point in tracking it, right? You can just go into tomorrow feeling generally bad about yourself and not specifically feeling bad about how far over you went or didn't go. Feeling bad about yourself leads to eating more, which leads to feeling worse about yourself, which leads to eating more. And you have to ask yourself if you're setting off this spiral because part of you likes it. I mean, you get to eat, right? And sure, you can feel bad about it, but feeling bad just leads to more eating. So yes, you want to lose weight, but also yes, part of you wants to find any excuse that it can to just keep on eating the way you always have. Another possibility is that you know the calorie count on that poutine isn't great. So instead of, you know, really owning it, you're going to protect yourself from the truth of it. You're going to insulate that away, right? And just keep fumbling around in the dark because that somehow feels safer, which it isn't. Knowing is always better for a few reasons. You can't change what you can't see. You need the awareness to know how far over you went with your calories so that you can do better next time. Okay, things got rough. Maybe the day didn't end with the poutine. I know mine wouldn't. I'd need something sweet after all that salt. Let's say you went over by a couple thousand calories. All right, next time, try to hold at 1800. Knowing is better. Acknowledgement is better. Don't just stop with awareness and go straight to the guilt and shame spiral. When you feel yourself sliding off the rails and you're trying to eat as mindfully as you can so that you walk away from that plate of fries feeling as satisfied as you possibly can. And we know that the more mindful and present you are with the food you eat, the more satisfied and less likely to eat you're going to feel later. So you're going to know when you're sliding off the rails. Keep tracking. Tell yourself that fine, yeah, you're going to have the poutine. This is just where you're at. But you're going to need that information so that you can do better next time. Yeah, it sucks that you're caught up in a binge, but let's do something to deal with next time. And this isn't a permission slip, by the way. It's a process. This is a step in that process. And tell yourself that too, because your intention is to get a grip on your relationship with food. This is the nuts and bolts of it. It happens when you're in the trenches. Next week, I am back with a very special episode. Not only is it number 50, but it's also coming out on my birthday. And it's Ask Whatever number 11. And it is just rammed. Make sure that you subscribe so that you don't miss that. There's a link in the notes to my free guide to getting started for the last time. And you can find my weight loss workbook by searching Disruptor and my name, Charlotte Skanes, on Amazon. Keep trying. Keep tracking, don't be intimidated, and don't give up. You've totally got this. Thank you for listening to Disrupting Obesity with Charlotte Skanes. If you know it's time to take back control, lose the weight, and keep it off, reach out to me privately with a direct message on Instagram that says ready, so you can start disrupting obesity.